Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Rosemary Shinohara of the Anchorage Daily News, Lisa Diemer of the Anchorage Daily News, and the Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News. Steve, it's Friday at noon. Governor Parnell is about to announce his plans for election year 2014. He's in Fairbanks. We don't know what he's going to do because everybody else will know, but we don't at noon. What are your thoughts here? What are the most likely outcome?
I don't know. We're reading the tea leaves at this point. The announcement, like you say, as we're taping this, is about 5 hours away.
Right.
Up in Fairbanks, nothing against Fairbanks, great town, but I don't know why you don't announce your intentions when you're the sitting governor in the media center in the biggest city of the state. But that's what he's chosen to do here. He's got at least three options. He could run for the U.S. House of Representatives again, Don Young's seat. He did that already. He could run for Senator Begich's seat in the Senate. That's up as well. Or he can run for re-election. Again, he still has another term in him.
There's one more. He could announce he's retiring and returning to public life, but
he could do
as
that.
My colleague Lisa Diemer pointed out to me correctly, why would you call a Fairbanks to do that?
That's right.
You could do that in Juneau.
I think that he would stay and run again as governor. He's got a Republican legislature. He got all the things pretty much that he wanted this last session. So if he says, I can do some really good, real good in Alaska, and I can get my agenda passed and make the changes that he sees that he'd like to make.
This would argue for him singing some version of We've Only Just Begun.
Yeah, right. Okay. I'll stay and finish the job.
Okay. Rosemary, the municipality of Anchorage, the Sullivan administration, rejects a revised labor union petition offered by the unions. Why and what does this mean in the ongoing battle over wages, work circumstances between the union and Mayor Sullivan, unions and Mayor Sullivan?
Well, I think the next step will be going to court. The unions are trying to get a referendum on the ballot as to whether the voters want to repeal the labor law rewrite that just passed the assembly last month. Took a lot of power away from the unions, took away their right to strike, limited their raises. And the city attorney's office basically has twice rejected their petition for a referendum on legal grounds, that there's some, that the claiming that the labor law rewrite is an administrative thing rather than a legislative thing.
Well, this is very confusing to the public and to many of us, and it was to me as well. I did meet Mr. Wheeler, the attorney for the city, Dennis Wheeler, and he explains or argues that it looks legislative, but it's really administrative. Can you explain that to the viewers?
I don't believe I can explain that. No, I mean, and one of the arguments of the union lawyer, Susan Orlansky, is it's passed by the assembly, it's legislative. You know, that's what the assembly does, it's a legislative branch.
Well, Mr. Wheeler would argue that there are parts of the law or the ordinances that are sort of lesser policy questions, I think, is the way he explains it, that are important, many of them, and that those are really functions left to the administration, even though the legislative branch, the assembly, is involved in this.
Whereas the unions say there's a half a dozen major policy things changed and raised in the labor law.
Okay, so the next stop is court then,
next
right?
Stop is court.
Okay. Steve, you've been a longtime observer of this. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I think Alaskans get great bang for the buck when it comes to utilizing all three branches of the government. You get the mayor's office, you got the assembly, and the judicial system. Just about everything that happens that's controversial seems to wind up in front of a judge, and that's what's going to happen here. And the only thing I can think of, I like you, Rosemary, I have no answer as to administrative or something that the assembly decides. I guess the negotiating's always been done by the mayor's administration in these things. So, I imagine that's where the policy part comes in. The assembly has always come in just to approve a labor contract once the union and the administration has struck a deal. So I imagine that you get the policy and you've got latitude within those parameters to negotiate a deal. And the parameters obviously have changed here, which the unions don't like.
The people on the union side argue that we have a tradition in this state through initiatives, not necessarily through referendums, but through initiatives that of allowing people to have their say, and to some degree we'll sort it out later.
You would think that if the assembly is granting these policy issues to the administration, you would think that the people through the initiative process would have the exact same right, that they could pass a new ordinance, a ballot initiative that would just change the policies.
Okay. Rose, let's stay with you for a minute. You had a big story Wednesday about municipal pay, who gets it, and to some degree why. Take us through the headlines, key facts and figures on city employment, pay, unions.
Okay. Well, I have it right here. Some of the things that are interesting are that everybody in the city except the executives is eligible for overtime. Supervisors, police captains, fire battalion chiefs. It's not like a lot of workplaces where a lot of those type of employees might be exempt.
And the executive is somebody who is appointed by the mayor. What's the definition
of executive? And the executive, all I know about them is that there's 180 of them. So some of them are like confidential employees or administrative assistants in the mayor's office. But mostly they're, in the legal staff or the department heads or they're in the mayor's office somewhere. We did something similar in 2010, and there were 4,000 people on the payroll. And this time we did it, there were only 3,000 people on the payroll. This is everybody who's come and gone in 2012. Somebody who was in a job and the person who replaced them when they left, they're both in there. So it's a pretty huge drop from 4,000 to 3,000.
And there's some people who would say, well, nobody should get paid more than the mayor, the chief executive
of
the
city. Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Why does that seem to be not possible at the present time?
Well, the Alaska Public Forum printed the salaries of people who made more than the mayor, their pay and their total compensation. And actually, that was kind of misleading because the mayor doesn't take health benefits from the city. His wife works for the school district. So he gets, it's still public benefits, but they're through the school district. So there's a $20,000 difference from his benefits and somebody else's benefits.
And what does the mayor get paid for the...
The mayor gets paid, I think it's $131,000. And he doesn't get overtime. So there are people who make close, even more than that, engineers and a couple other people. Most people make less than that, but they get overtime, and he doesn't.
And what I hear is if we didn't pay the overtime, then we'd have to hire more people, and they would be expensive too. Is that accurate or fair?
Well, certainly for MLMP, when we asked for an explanation, they had the top 9 of the top 10 people on the payroll were MLMP people, IBEW employees, and some non-represented people who are superintendent. And the reason they had so much overtime, as explained by the city, is first of all the storm, the big windstorm we had last year. That was about 300,000 of it. But second, they delayed hiring to try to save money last summer, and then they had all this construction stuff going on. So that's very much a decision not to hire somebody and to have that person.
So what I'm getting out of this is, if you like to play the political blame game, it's pretty hard to pin the tail on this donkey of who's at fault here, and that, the arguing parties have different versions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay. Lisa, let's get back to you. You didn't cover the entire legislative session, but you did cover lively parts of it. For one thing, Governor Parnell finally declared victory in the tax debate he had with the Democrats over revising ACEs. But his critics didn't see that it was successful. They've launched an initiative. Take us back to the session and tell us what you saw.
Yeah, I was there for 1 month of the 3-month session, right in the middle, and pretty much the whole session. There was a lot of intense debate over oil taxes, this time in the form of Senate Bill 21, which was the governor's bill, which of course did pass and made pretty dramatic cuts in the tax rates that the oil companies will pay. From talking to industry, the final version, there aren't really any oil industry losers in that. They all get nice cuts in what they'll pay. Some earlier versions, the newcomers didn't like because they were losing some of their valuable credits. but everyone seems pretty happy with this, except, as you've mentioned, the critics. So no sooner was the legislative session over than, and it's actually not an initiative, it's a referendum. And it's an interesting part of, it's in within the Alaska Constitution that allows citizens, the people, to basically veto a law. And that's what a referendum is. That's how it differs from an initiative.
As opposed to enacting a law.
Yeah, an initiative creates a law, a referendum repeals it. They are already going very quickly. There's different rules for referendums than for initiatives, because if you're repealing a law already done, you've got to act quickly under the timeframes that have been set up. They got their signature booklets already. They got them on Tuesday. They have sent them out to, I think, what they're calling volunteer captains all around the state, and collecting signatures from people who would support this idea of putting it on the 2014 primary election ballot to veto the new tax structure and go back to the Palin administration era.
If I might, Lisa, do we know if some of, or a good many of the initiative or signature gatherers are going to be volunteers, paid, or how's that going to work, or do we know?
I don't know yet. They're certainly hoping for paid. They're starting to collect money. They've got a little bit of money from individuals. One of the organizers, Pat Lavin, he's actually out of state this week, and so he wasn't up on the very latest. So he's not sure if they've had any big contributions yet that would allow them to hire signature gatherers. Mm-hmm. They're hoping to. That's usually the way it's done.
Because you can guarantee they'll do the work, they have a big incentive to do it. As your friends and neighbors are wonderful, but you know, they may or may not do it. We've seen that before.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's the marijuana initiative, and this is an initiative.
Right. There's actually, I mean, that's one point I did want to make, is that basically people get ready. You're going to be looking at signature gatherers, petitions, wherever you are. There's a number of these out there. I just learned today, we'll get back to the marijuana one, but I just learned today there's one. It was filed April 26 to increase the minimum wage. And that one's brand new that I haven't looked into yet, but they want to make the minimum wage starting raising it to $8.75 per hour and then going up to $9.75 and increasing it after that. So that's a new one that's just out there. And they are in the very early stages of that. The marijuana initiative is also pretty interesting. They want to legalize marijuana, allow retail sales, put the alcohol control board in charge, and then until they create a marijuana control board. And so that one's also in early stages. Because it's an initiative, they get more time, and so they're not on this fast track. The Senate Bill 21 oil tax one, they have to have more than 30,000 signatures in hand by mid-July.
And they have to have so many from different electoral districts that they have to be spread out through the state. It's a real effort.
Yes, it's statewide, so they have that. And there's another initiative also that's a work in progress, and that's another one related to Pebble Mine. You may remember going back to 2008, there was the big clean water ballot measure. This time they're calling it Bristol Bay Forever, and it would basically say a big mine out in the Bristol Bay area, the legislature signs off on that, and it would put the final decision on a Pebble Mine with the legislature.
And right now, how would that decision be finalized?
Right now, there's many permits. There's a lot of different permits along the way.
But it's an administrative process.
Right, it's an administrative process, right. And that initiative is being challenged in court in Fairbanks on the grounds that you can't take that issue to a statewide vote. It's a local issue. The Parnell administration is defending it. They've already signed off on it. There's a lot of leeway in Alaska for democracy, for the people taking action. So they've defended it already, and they're defending it in court.
And the marijuana initiative has, it seems to me, will have some money behind it, as it has, the issue has before, the marijuana policy project. These are people from the states with money. It's just not hippies who decide they want to get in favor of this. Right?
Right, yeah.
So they'll have some money.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, one thing I was thinking about this, petition drives. voters, as Lisa indicated, are going to be running into these people who are with these petitions. And I mean, sometimes these people have three different petitions.
They do.
How do you feel about marijuana, oil taxes, the minimum wage, and perhaps something else?
Right. Yeah. They're as you said, they're motivated. They get paid for this. They're pretty organized. And there's some people who are very, very good at gathering a lot of signatures in a relatively short period of time. So, yeah, you'll have to run the gauntlet going in from the parking garages to maybe the Fifth Avenue Mall or the Diamond Mall.
And one of the things they'll tell you is you don't have to be in favor. You just have to let's just put it on the ballot and let the people decide.
Yeah.
And I'll get paid 50 cents for your signature. They don't tell you that part.
Right. You don't get a lot of details when they ask you to sign the petition. It's just, this is for, you know, candy for everybody.
Okay. Steve, going back to our friend Governor Parnell, whatever he's running for, he has been off to see the world. Where has he been? And I noticed that there have been some grousing about his travel expenses. Is that a, quote, issue for Alaskans?
Only if he goes to Maui for a conference in January. That's when everybody gets really angry about things like that. But he spent a lot of time in Europe here. We're in so many worldwide markets. Our fish industry is a worldwide competitor. Our oil industry, energy, obviously, it's in a worldwide market. So it's probably a good thing that the leader of our state goes off and shows the flag and makes some business deals, hopefully, with various heads of government. We certainly see people coming in from Japan and
well, he's
South Korea coming
to the state.
Well, he's
going to present this as a fact-finding mission. I need to know what's going on in this world. And
right.
So we can be competitive, and
that's
I
right.
need to find out. And
it's I'm good not, business. Yeah.
yeah, yeah. And I don't need to sleep in a tent when I'm in Oslo.
No, right, right. Well, he doesn't. He doesn't have to do that. And I think you'll get one side that says, well, this is the cost of doing business in the world today, and it's important for leaders to be seen and leaders to meet other leaders and make those kinds of connections. I don't think you can just stay in Juneau and watch the world go by. You
and if we just watched the news last night, for example, President Obama was in Mexico.
Yeah,
and then people would say, well, he'd say that's what my job.
I think it lends a lot of weight when the head of your state or the head of your country comes in and meets with other leaders of your. It shows that it is. Important that it is a priority that you really want this done and you're really interested. I think that I think it's beneficial to have the leader of your state, the governor, or if it's the president going out to meet other leaders. And also, if you want to go back to your original question about prognosticating about what he's going to say this afternoon in Fairbanks, when you see he's in Europe and. Okay, is he trying to broaden his resume so he can run for the U.S. Senate? That's something else to think about.
Steve, I can hear a politician's voice in my ears saying, I've been to Spain, I've been to France, I've seen London Bridge, and there's no place like Fairbanks.
Like that. I'm running for governor.
Okay, Lisa, the state plans a fast-track study of the prospects of liquefied natural gas. This came out of this last session. Why and why now?
The why now, I'm not 100% sure, except for that they had money in this year's budget, that this budget year is almost over, ends June 30th, so they needed to spend it now or lose it. So it's at least that. I don't know why they didn't get on that a little bit earlier. A big natural gas pipeline, the idea of it has really shifted from, going to Alberta and then to the lower 48 to one that would go to a port in Alaska, in south central Alaska, and then export the gas. And so there wasn't maybe a need prior years so much until this shift of where this project was going to go. And so, and what the state is looking at are several aspects, but among them are because we own the gas, and then under the terms of the leases, even when it's produced, still have 12.5% of most of it, more for newer fields, and that's the state's royalty gas. So
and presumably, this is North Slope gas at the present time that we're talking about,
right? Right, on the North Slope, the gas on the North Slope, and so the state. One thing they want to look at with this new study is. When should they sell that gas? They could sell it. They can pick under the leases. Do they sell it to the producers, right there at the wellhead? Do they market it and sell it themselves? And depending on how they go with that, it could affect the economics of a big pipeline. And so that's what they're evaluating is, will the state be a winner or a loser in how they make that decision and which way to go?
Now, in this legislature, they passed a legislation that for a lot of studies, the Wautana Dam, the gas line, this particular, well, this may have come from other sources, but still it's a study, and there are a number of other studies. Usually this is kind of controversial in the legislature, the number of studies of why are we studying on this? Let's just do something. Mm-hmm. Did you hear much of that this time, or was it a different voice?
You know, I don't know that I heard much on that. They do seem, I mean, they seem to want the information. They want the answers. There was the legislative audit of the Kinnick Arm Bridge, and that was some valuable information that they really used in their decision making.
And had a big influence.
It had a big influence. Nothing ended up happening on that on any legislation related to Kubota, but it's the first year of the 2-year session, so things aren't dead yet.
Okay. Steve, a Fairbanks woman, speaking of gathering signatures,
You're
was
right.
sentenced to 2 years for election fraud while she was gathering signatures, a woman named Deborah Carroll. This is very unusual, and especially, I can't remember anything like it. Please explain.
Well, she was gathering signatures for petition drive for the coastal zone management issue that was on the ballot last year. And there were some inconsistencies in the signatures and information that actually the petition sponsors found. It was Bruce Botello down in Juneau who actually saw this and noticed this. She was arrested and charged with numerous counts. She had a plea deal, and a judge last Friday sentenced her. The sentence was actually 4 years in jail, in prison. 2 years of that was suspended, so she'll have to serve two. So it's interesting on a number of points. One, it's a harsh penalty.
One of the things that confuses me is, was she accused of defrauding the Tea Party people? Were they paying her for these signatures? Was that the fraud, or is it an offense to the electoral process?
I think the electoral process, was what was damaged here, because she was a contract employee. She was contracted to do this, to gather the signatures. So I don't think she did anything involving the contractor, but I do believe it was the inconsistency that was on the information that would later be turned into the state. That was noticed, again, by Mr. Botello down in Juneau.
A former attorney general.
Former attorney general, mayor, as well as of Juneau as well, and a prime backer of the Coastal Zone Management Plan, which was repealed by the legislature some time ago, or not renewed.
Thank you, Steve. Rosemary, Tuesday was your last day at the Anchorage Daily News after almost 40 years. Richard Nixon was president. The Trans-Alaska Pipeline had not been built. I know we can't show a highlight film of the Rosemary Shinohara career, but what are some of the things that stand out in your memory after this remarkable career in journalism?
Well, you're right. The pipeline was being built when I went to work at the Daily News. And one of the things I'll always remember is covering the pipeline construction and going up and down the pipeline and talking to, like, welders and who were most worried about cooking their steaks for dinner.
And how many people worked at the Anchorage Daily News back when?
I think there could have been the same number of reporters and editors. There were not very many, but there were more. They had a bigger, broader staff.
Oh, and you like myself, worked through the big years. We expanded. We got the new building.
Yeah. I worked in four different locations. Post Road was just the warehousey place that started out. And right behind the Times, which is where they went when they made the agreement with the Times. Down the block from the Times, where they moved to get away from the Times. Dowling Road, where they moved because they needed a lot more space to expand and do their own presses and whatnot.
And do you by any chance remember your first story?
I don't remember my first story. I remember that I had just had a baby, who is now almost 40.
A doctor.
Turned out to be a doctor, yes. And
thanks to Mom.
So I was only working like 3 or 4 days a week, and I was covering like obituaries and lifestyle features and stuff like that.
And that's back in the days when there was a serious women's page.
There
right?
was Well, the news, they didn't call it women. I think they called it people or something.
That was considered enlightenment in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Lisa and Rose, let's have a brief colloquy on the changing face of journalism. Journalism had changed so much in just a decade, let alone four decades. Journalists expected to do so many things. In the electronic world, the front page of the paper is changing all the time. Lisa, a few thoughts here.
Just that we're all so more immediate now, I think, is the biggest thing. I mean, before you had a luxury of time when you were a print journalist, TV was always on a rush schedule. We weren't so much. Now it's always, I need three paragraphs in 10 minutes. You know, we're 24/7, and we're not really 24 because we don't have anyone really at 2 or 3 a.m., but occasionally we do, you know, if it's big enough, we will. So that's the biggest thing, I feel like, is that just so much more immediacy. I think that's good. I think that's the good part of it. The bad part of it is with all the other sources of information and all the losses in revenue we've had, this our diminished state.
Staff.
Many fewer reporters.
Rosemary, 20 seconds.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the new journalism doesn't support as big a staff. It's very small compared to what we used to have, and that limits what we can do.
And what's the remedy for that? Is there one?
Well, the new industry is trying its hardest to make a go of it online and sell advertising online and make people pay for what.
We've got to stop there. Thank you so much, Rosemary Shinohara, and thank you for watching. Good night.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublicmedia.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.